From Indianapolis and 90.1 WFYI News, I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and this is your WFYI Weekly News Roundup. The week started with Indianapolis-based Marion University joining Purdue and St. Francis Universities in offering help to students at St. Joseph's College in Rensselaer. Last week, they learned that the college would not be offering classes for the 2017-2018 school year.
I think the leadership at St. Joseph's College certainly would have considered how these students transferring to other institutions is going to impact them long term.
That's Marion spokesman Mark Apple. He says the university will guarantee that students' out-of-pocket tuition costs won't change. Purdue admissions director Mitch Warren says at least a dozen St. Joe students have expressed interest in transferring to West Lafayette while the college figures out its long-term financial plan.
My hope would be, even if they come here for a semester or a year or perhaps even three semesters, and St. Joe's were to reopen, that's always an option for them to go back and finish their degree.
Last week, the St. Joseph College Board of Trustees voted to close the school for at least the 2017-2018 school year because of dire financial problems. The city of Anderson wants to attract more new business, so it too reached out to Indiana College and University graduates this week by offering to pay off their college debt if they can bring and run a successful business to that city. It's part of the Anderson Now program. Anderson University will oversee it. The program will select 10 entrepreneurs with viable business plans, and each will receive up to $25,000 to put towards paying off their college loans. Near the end of 2016, the carrier story went big. Donald Trump came to Indianapolis, announcing he helped save hundreds of the company's jobs from leaving the country. 1 mile away, workers at the Rexnord plant watched with mixed emotions. As WFYI's Drew Dottolin reports, the 300 men and women losing their jobs at Rexnord are now facing a harsh reality familiar to millions of working-class Americans.
I mean, this truly is the calm before the storm, because that storm is coming, and it'll be here in just a few weeks for 300 people.
Tim Mathis makes a daily one-hour trip to work at a ball bearings factory on the west side of Indianapolis. He's about to lose his job because the factory, run by Rexnord Corporation, is moving to Monterrey, Mexico. The average salary the company pays its workers will drop from about $25 an hour to about $3 an hour. Mathis says things have been tense at the plant.
Is Rexnord a patriotic, good American citizen? Absolutely not. Not in my opinion. In my opinion, they've committed the ultimate act of betrayal.
Mathis is 51, and he's been through this before, so he knows what's coming. He worked at a factory in Greensburg until his job there was shipped overseas. He says closings like these have deep, far-reaching consequences.
I mean, one day you're going to hear, did you hear about Joe? Joe lost his home. And, you know, before long you're going to hear about somebody else whose wife divorced him. And then you're going to hear about somebody else that took his life.
I met Mathis at Sully's Bar and Grill. We can see the carrier plant across the street. That's the factory Donald Trump often brought up at campaign rallies and during the first presidential debate when he promised to incentivize companies to stay in America.
All you have to do is take a look at Carrier Air Conditioning in Indianapolis. They left, fired 1,400 people. They're going to Mexico. So many hundreds and hundreds of companies are doing this. We cannot let it happen.
Months later, Trump partially followed through on his promise when Carrier announced that his influence kept hundreds of jobs from leaving. Mathis says it was bittersweet to watch the story unfold.
We were ecstatic. We were happy for the people of Carrier. We were hopeful for ourselves. We were hopeful for all the workers in America, all the people that are losing their jobs.
The Rexnord workers are losing their jobs, but they still don't know when. Mathis can't take a new job without knowing when his old one will end. And if he quits early, he'll lose his severance package, 1 week's pay for each of the 12 years he spent working at the plant.
For myself and my family, we're going to need that money to move forward.
There are programs in place to help workers laid off as a result of foreign trade, namely the Trade Adjustment Assistance Program that helps them get certified for new types of jobs. Mathis doesn't know yet if he'll use it, but for him, getting a job isn't the problem. The challenge is getting a job that pays the salary he's used to and learning new skills at an age when most people hope to be a career veteran.
Once again, we start over. The older you get to start over, the harder it gets.
The U.S. lost 5 million manufacturing jobs between 2000 and 2014, according to the Economic Policy Institute. The reasons behind that trend are a whole nother story. But Mathis, like President Trump, blames trade deals like NAFTA for what's happened to him.
Our lawmakers have to be able to see this. They're the ones that have to stop the bleeding. It's got to stop. At some point, if it continues, where do we work? Where do our kids work?
He says young workers will have to fight for better trade laws, or these kinds of high-paying manufacturing jobs could be a thing of the past. For 90.1 WFYI News, I'm Drew Dodlin.
A new report says some Indiana cities could be among the most impacted in the country by a potential trade war. The Brookings Institution says Columbus, Indiana is just over 50% dependent on exports, more than any other metro area in the country. Elkhart, Kokomo, and Lafayette are also in the top 10. Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute Director John Ketzenberger says these small cities' economies all have one thing in common.
They're manufacturing hard goods. We're talking about parts for cars or the big motors, that kind of thing.
In a trade war, the U.S. and a country like China or Mexico would retaliate against each other with escalating tariffs and other policies. Ketzenberger says that would have a ripple effect on all countries that trade globally and on the communities and companies that make the goods they trade. One example, Cummins, a huge global engine maker headquartered in Columbus. Ketzenberger says a trade war would hurt its revenues and cause it to shed jobs. More than 5,000 jobs in Columbus are directly tied to exports, with another 15,000 indirectly affected.
You start to lose some of those jobs, and it can have a devastating effect on a local economy in a hurry. And it probably wouldn't be long before it would be felt across the state.
Cummins also makes Columbus one of the nation's top per capita users of visas for foreign skilled workers, the kind of visas that have come under fire from President Trump. You're listening to 90.1 WFYI's Weekly News Roundup.
What do you wonder about Indianapolis?
Why did Pogues Run get buried underground?
Why are there so many potholes?
Who's in charge of synchronizing all the stoplights in town?
With Curious Indy, you can ask questions and help WFYI News decide what we should be reporting on next, and sometimes even be part of finding the answer. So, Curious Indy? Go to wfyi.org/curiousindy to find out more.
This week, we got a new look at a study that measures the success of the preventative health care services offered under the Affordable Care Act. The study looked at low-income adults without children in 30 states, including Indiana, where Medicaid had been expanded. It found that adults are able to get more access to services like immunizations, screenings, and mammograms.
Encouraging healthier behaviors, more preventive care, and that would lead down the road cost savings for everybody.
That's IU researcher Kosalee Simon, who helped co-author the study.
We don't find improvements in risky behaviors such as smoking, heavy drinking, lack of exercise, and obesity.
And an Indianapolis nonprofit that promotes health, wellness, and exercise for local youth is now a top contender in a national contest. WFYI's Taylor Bennett talked with 913 Sports CEO Tom Hanley.
You're a top 10 finalist for the Tip the Hat Award. What is that exactly?
So LIDS Foundation, which has been a partner of ours for the past several years, has an annual grant competition. And what they're doing this year is they have selected 10 nonprofits for public voting. And from there, the top five will go on to an internal employee vote, where the winning nonprofit walks away with a check for $125,000, and the other four have varying grants that go with them as well. So for us, it's a significant potential grant.
And what would you do with that money?
For us, that would allow us to get 10,000 more kids riding bikes here in Central Indiana over the course of the next year. So it's a great way to be able to continue to grow moving forward and to be able to connect with the community.
Now, for those that maybe are not familiar with 913 Sports, what do you guys do?
We take bicycle simulators into schools and youth organizations all across Central Indiana, and we integrate our programming into traditional physical education curriculum. So our whole goal is to get kids riding bikes for health and fitness and do it in a really fun and engaging way.
And you go into schools. You go into IPS.
Yeah, we go into IPS. We work with all the township schools and a lot of the surrounding school districts in the donut counties. Our programming works with kindergartners through seniors in high school, and we use the bicycle really as a way to not only get kids moving, but to teach them about health and fitness and teamwork and collaboration in a lot of ways. So since we've launched here in Indiana in 2012, we've been able to grow. We've served almost 40,000 individual students over the course of that time frame. One of our big goals over the course of the past year has been growing our capacity. We currently have more than 250 schools on a wait list for our programs. So we're adding staff, we're adding resources. Last year, we were able to serve about 50 schools. This year, our goal is to have a capacity to ultimately be able to serve 160 schools. So really working hard on just being able to meet the demand that's out there for us.
And you can cast your vote for 913 to win that $125,000 grant by going to its website, 913sports.org.
So many people voted for the Broad Ripple Bark Park to win a makeover from the dog food company Benefil that they won. Indy Parks hosted a public meeting this week to hear from dog owners to see just what they would like to see when they redo that space.
We're deciding how to use that money, and we want to get public input, but also give people some options of agility equipment or turf samples and hear what they have to say about what they'd like to see at the park. And we've already done some just pretty casual surveying, so this is our first, you know, sort of way to get the public in and let them see what we're up to.
Andrea Watts with Indy Parks says that the money will be well spent.
You know, it's a 17-year-old facility, and it's something that, like, it's long overdue, and we know that people deserve this, and their dogs deserve it, and it's become an exciting time to see the oldest dog park in Indianapolis be improved like this.
And final plans and installation should be completed by this summer.
A group of eco-minded school kids want the city of Indianapolis to get more involved in climate change. This week, they presented a resolution to the Public Works Committee encouraging the city to reduce carbon emissions, increase energy efficiency, and support more renewable energy. 15-year-old Cora Gordon and members of the Youth Power Indiana group have spent the last year working with city council members to craft their climate recovery resolution.
Well, a lot of the times we talk about what is going to go into the resolution, like what we're going to have in it, how to prepare for presenting it to the counselors, like who we need to talk to, what kind of support we need.
This week, 20 kids aged 8 through 16 gave their personal reasons for supporting the measure.
All of the testimonies will have something to do with how this resolution will help benefit our future. And especially, you know, now in our recent political climate, these kids are having a lot of trouble, you know, just dealing with some things. So I think this resolution will be helpful for them, and I think that their testimonies will have a lot to do with that.
Youth Power Indiana hopes that the resolution will spur the city to take some real action.
Planting trees isn't enough. When the city council steps in, then the entire city has these rules we need to, like, abide by or, like, work on. And so hopefully we'll be seeing a lot more, like, bus routes here soon with the Indigo, and we'll be seeing a lot more recycling bins around and just, like, all around a cleaner Indianapolis.
The resolution could go before the entire city county council for a vote at its meeting in March. The Indiana Petroleum Marketers Convenience Store Association plans to place ads at Indiana gas stations, opposing a plan by Indiana Republican lawmakers that would use higher fuel taxes to pay for repairs to the state's roads and bridges. The ads will include information on how to contact your state lawmaker. Their current proposal would raise gas prices by a dime a gallon for regular and 20 cents a gallon for diesel. You're listening to 90.1 WFYI's Weekly News Roundup.
There's a new installation at the Great American Songbook Foundation Gallery at the Palladium in Carmel. The exhibit honors the legendary vocalist Ella Fitzgerald and the 8 albums of music from Broadway and Hollywood that she recorded for Verve Records during the 1950s and 60s. Archivist Lisa Lobdell says most of the items on display are from her own personal foundation.
You can really look and see how the times changed by the clothes that she's wearing and her hair. You're going to learn about her biography, but you're also going to see the LPs. You're going to hear some of the music on our interactive. We have over 30 recordings from the VERV records on our interactive.
And for the first time, the foundation is offering parts of the installation as a traveling exhibit for schools and libraries. Vice President Chris Lewis says it's a great way to introduce a younger generation to the music and history of the songbook.
Irving Berlin said, history makes music and music makes history. I mean, music is a reflection of what's happening in society at any given time. And this is an important part of our cultural history. And so to be able to take what we do here in this little space in the Palladium and Carmel out to the world and share the songbook in a new and exciting way is the embodiment of our mission.
Admission to Ella Sings the Songbook is free, and the exhibit is open daily. You can learn more at its website, thecenterforthepermingarts.org. Each month, WFYI pays homage to NPR's Tiny Desk Concert by presenting our small studio session. We invite a local band or musician into our performance studio, where they perform three or four songs as we do a four-camera video shoot and record the session. And then afterwards, I get to interview our guest. Then we post it all on our website at wfyi.org/smallstudio. This month, we feature musician Tad Robinson. He's Indianapolis-based soul blues singer. He has a large and loyal fan base, both locally and internationally. Both fans and critics are crazy for Tad Robinson's latest album, Day Into Night. Last year, it garnered him his 8th nomination from the highly acclaimed Blues Foundation.
I'm kind of in the community, but haven't landed the trophy yet, but it's, you know, it's part of the business to be part of the conversation, at least.
Yeah. You know, I called home one night, reaching out that loving feeling. I told myself that she be needing the same.
Robinson is a major force when it comes to current soul blues artists.
It's more of a blend. It's not straight up blues. It's more kind of a marriage between the soul of the 70s, soul music of the 70s, and Chicago blues. So it's this hybrid, but it's one of the dynamic forms of the blues, and it's one that I've always been drawn to.
I come home after working hard, watch the tube before I go to bed. What I see starts to worry me. Looks like the doggone world has gone mad. But my baby's there to remind me, with just a touch of a hand, there's more good than bad.
Which is why Robinson's voice is his instrument.
You bring some of your heart, and the way you perceive the lyrics, you know, the direction they're going. So I just sing the way I feel, and when the musicians keep coming around, then you figure, well, I must be doing something right. They haven't fired me yet, you know.
Yeah. I just keep on stumbling, making the same mistakes again. While she's keeping the home fires burning, I take a wrong turn every now and then. Staying out late with the fellas, and I'm losing track of time. When I know deep down in my heart, I should be right there by her side.
But he has great respect for his musicians.
Everybody on the bandstand is a pretty heavy hitter, and they're all great, you know, great players. And they generally they know a lot more than their instrument. My drummer, Jeff Chapin, he plays guitar and piano, you know, and my organ player, Kevin Anker, plays really good guitar, and he's a really good bass player.
And like other soul blues artists, Robinson honors the harmonica.
I mean, that's like banjo in bluegrass or tenor saxophone in straight-up jazz. Harmonica is an instrument that has become emblematic of Chicago blues and some of the, you know, or even Delta blues, early blues. It was an instrument that it's just suited perfectly the way it's set up to express yourself in a blues format.
A tradition that continues to fascinate and encourage him.
You know, we call it the tin whistle or the Mississippi saxophone. And there's 10, you know, 10 holes and there's 20 reeds and there's just a world of music there. And, you know, as you, with any instrument, I'm sure, you just keep on unpeeling the layers and finding out things that are accessible on that very simple, you know, children's instrument. But played at a high level, it can be very, very interesting and very expressive.
No more time to waste on love. I'm moving on. Push came to shove. I'll hit the road where I'll be free. Fall to the wind, what love did to me. Took my.
You can see Taz's performance on our website at wfyi.org/smallstudio. You've been listening to the WFYI Weekly News Roundup. You can get the latest local news anytime online at our website, wfyi.org. I'll be back with more local news later this afternoon during All Things Considered. Stay tuned now for The Lawmakers, a weekly look at the Indiana General Assembly. I'm Jill Dittmeyer.